Welcome to the Business Bookshelf podcast, where I interview business authors and talk about their newly released books. The aim is that if you listen to this podcast regularly, that you will get insight into a wide range of business topics, from leadership through to innovation, culture, communication, and many more. Today's topic is facilitation. It is becoming less straightforward for people to move forward together. They face increasing complexity and decreasing control. They need to work with more people from across more divides. In such situations, the most common way of advancing, some people telling others what to do or everyone just doing what they think they need to do, isn't adequate. Today, I interview Adam Kahan. Adam is a leading organizer, designer, and facilitator of processes through which businesses, governments, and civil society leaders can work together to address such challenges. He has worked in more than 50 countries in every part of the world with executives and politicians, generals and guerrillas, civil servants and trade unionists, community activists and United Nations officials, clergy and artists. Adam is the author of Facilitating Breakthrough, How to Remove Obstacles, Bridge Differences, and Move Forward Together. Making progress on complex, problematic situations requires a new approach to working together, transformative facilitation, a structured and creative process for removing the obstacles to fluid forward movement. I talked to Adam about transformative facilitation and what it is, vertical and horizontal facilitation, and what you need to be a master facilitator. So here we go. Enjoy the interview. Give us, before we get onto your book, could you give us an overview of your career, and please include the work with guerrilla fighters in your overview of your career?
Yeah, so I have an academic background, which did not prepare me well for the work I'm doing. I have an undergraduate degree in physics and a graduate degree in economics, and I went to work for Shell, the oil company in London, and I ended up being the head of the global political, economic, social scenario group. So I started off in business. And during the time I was working for Shell, there was a group in South Africa of academics associated with the ANC-leaning University of Western Cape that wanted to use the Shell scenario methodology to make plans, to think through the transition from apartheid to democracy. So that's how I first came to South Africa. And Peter LaRue and Vincent Mapai, who were the organizers of the project, used scenario planning in a way that nobody had ever used it before. They decided that the group that would do the work, that would think about what was happening and what should be done, or what could happen and what should be done about it, would include not just their colleagues, not just people from their organization, the way we'd done it at Shell, but that they would involve leaders from across the society, which at that time in South Africa meant a black and white opposition and establishment, left and right, men and women, business, politics, trade union, civil society. So that was a very remarkable effort that you could, or accomplishment that you could bring into one room 28 people who had been fighting each other and who didn't agree with or like or trust each other, and that they could work productively and creatively and even joyfully to think through the situation and what could be done about it. And I wouldn't say that the Montfleur scenario exercise had a huge impact on what happened in South Africa. It had some impact on the economic policy of the Mandela government, because Trevor Manuel and Tito Mboweni, who were the two senior ANC people in that process, went on to be in the national cabinet for decades. But it completely changed my idea of what could be done in the world and what I wanted to do. So anyway, to make a long story short, I resigned from Shell and emigrated from London to Cape Town, married the project organizer. So altogether, a successful project. And that's what I've done ever since. So for 30 years, day in, day out, now with an organization that's called Rios Partners, our speciality is facilitating teams of people, diverse teams of people, even people from different organizations, even people that don't agree with or like or trust each other, to work on, yeah, on their, on what they think needs work and what they know they can't make progress on alone. So my first experience was in South Africa. What you alluded to was work we did in Colombia during the Civil War, where in that case, the team included the left-wing guerrillas and the right-wing paramilitaries. But this is what we've done, yeah, day in, day out for 30 years, sometimes with teams from within organizations, but usually with teams from across organizations, literally all over the world on every issue from water to climate change to peace to health to education, from Brazil to Ethiopia to the Netherlands to Canada to Myanmar. So that's fantastic. My career in a nutshell.
And I want to get onto your book, Adam, and Colombia features quite a lot in your book and the scenarios and you know, stories from your Colombia facilitation. But your book is called, and I really enjoyed it, Facilitating Breakthrough: How to Remove Obstacles, Bridge Differences, and Move Forward Together. And so, Adam, what led you to writing it? In other words, what was the purpose of writing it? And can you give us a brief overview of the book?
Probably the Colombia stories jump out at you because they're dramatic. And the first story in the book is from Colombia, although the stories are from everywhere in the world. But it is true that I had the idea of writing the book when I was facilitating a workshop in Colombia, long after the first experience. So in 2017, after I'd been facilitating for 30 years. And this was after the signing of the peace accords. And somebody said to me in that workshop, a very well-known Colombian peacemaker named Pacho Duru, was very interested in how the workshop was going and why it was working the way it was. And he said to me, Adam, I see what you're doing. And I said, well, what am I doing? And he said, you're removing the obstacles to the expression of the mystery. So I found this a very evocative phrase. I didn't really know what he meant, but I found this idea that facilitation is not about getting people to do things, which is how most people, including most facilitators, including me, some of the time, think that our work is about getting people to do things. But that's really not a helpful framing at all. You can't get anybody to do anything. Well, in general, you can't get anybody to do anything. And certainly as a facilitator, you can't get anybody to do anything. And so this idea that it would be not about getting people to do things, but about removing the obstacles to them doing what they were trying to do. Anyhow, 4 years later, the book's finished, and I've sort of excavated what that one sentence means. And I think it means removing the obstacles that prevent or hold people back from contributing and connecting with equity, or if you want a fancier way to say it, to employing power, love, and justice. So anyhow,
is that what you mean by transformative facilitation? Is that the term that you use there?
I can come back to that, to okay. What I mean by transformative facilitation. But yes, transformative facilitation is the kind of facilitation that enables people to move forward together. And what it requires is removing the obstacles to contribution, connection, and equity, or power, love, and justice. So that was the direct inspiration for the book and the idea, the red thread through the book. But now that it's finished, I think I see more clearly what it's trying to say. You know, when you're in the middle of it for several years, as I was, you get caught up in the detail. But after it's at the printer, you have a chance to say, well, what was this really all about? And I think it's about something more basic than what I've just said, which is that I think the world needs more and better collaboration, that the scope for getting stuff done, whether it's in an organization or in a community or in a country, by some people forcing other people to do what they want them to do, is getting more and more limited. So the world needs more and better collaboration. And therefore, I argue, the world needs more and better facilitation. And the book is doing two things. It's proposing a new general theory and practice of facilitation. It didn't invent a new kind of facilitation, but it is a new way of understanding what's it really all about. And then the other point is, and I think this is the most important point of all, the book is offering a bigger definition of facilitating, about who needs to facilitate, not just professional consultants who keep time and referee, but anybody who helps the group move forward together, whether as a member or a leader or a manager or a coach or a friend. It doesn't just involve running meetings or workshops. It's everything involved in helping people move forward together over days or months or years. And finally, it has a bigger idea of the role of facilitating, which is essentially to help people collaborate to effect change. So there you go. I've saved you $11.95. That's the summary of the book.
Well, I still think people should buy it. And talking about your book, Adam, so not everybody and very, very few people are going to facilitate, an agreement between world leaders or, people in Colombia, et cetera. So how do you see people using your book? And what scenarios do you expect people to learn the facilitation skills that are in the book? Is it between vendors, between customers, negotiating salary increases for unions? How do you see them using it?
So the book is very specifically not targeted at people doing international negotiations or peace treaties. I use those examples because that's my own experience.
Of course.
And I think that these stories allow us to see the dynamics of facilitation in bright colors. But I'm arguing, or I'm convinced, that exactly the same dynamics show up within organizations, in communities, and that exactly the same principles apply. So to answer your question, the book is for anybody who's helping people collaborate to effect change. The key word is, or the key, it's not for everybody. It's not for people who don't want things to change. And it's not for people who think they can make things change by forcing them. So, but if you want to collaborate to effect change, whether that's in your department with your colleagues or your employees, whether it's between departments, between marketing and production, whether it's with outside vendors or customers or regulators or communities, in any setting where people are trying to work together in order to change things. In other words, in any setting where people have already figured out that even though maybe they wish they could, they can't change things on their own or just with their friends and colleagues. They need to work with others, including strangers and opponents.
Yes. So is it around conflict then primarily and coming to a win-win type of solution? Is that the sort of scenarios that it would be used in?
Yes. But I have an understanding of conflict that's maybe different from most people. I think whenever you're working with people where there's difference, different backgrounds, different perspectives, different positions, there's always going to be disagreement and conflict. You can pretend it's not there. You can paper over it. You can ignore it. But there's always going to be conflict. And the challenge is to work productively with that conflict rather than have it be destructive. And so I'm saying all work in diverse teams involves disagreement and conflict. And therefore all work to make progress on difficult things involves working with conflict. You know, when I was an employee of Shell, and went to South Africa. I was 30 years old at the time. And I came back to London and I told my boss, the head of the strategy group in Shell, I said, you know, I discovered this thing that nobody had ever done before, and this way of working with diverse groups. And he made a very smart observation. He said, Adam, you don't understand. This is what we have to do all the time within the company. There's always different departments and different geographies who understand things differently, and we have to figure out a way to work together to make progress on our normal business things. And so I don't consider difference and conflict and diversity unusual or problematic. That's what allows us to figure out how to deal with challenging issues. And so how do you do that? That's what the book's about.
Yes. And Adam, I want to get on to, you know, some insights into the process itself, if you can. But firstly, I want to ask you, can, even if it's between two departments, like sales and marketing, let alone between a vendor and a supplier, or, you know, a company or a trade union, like I said earlier, or whatever, do you think you always should have an external facilitator, or do you think you can have someone from in the company? I suppose you need someone who's completely unbiased about either side, I would think. Is that normally an external facilitator that comes in and does the facilitation?
No, it doesn't have to be. And I think it's more useful to think about the facilitation role than the facilitator as a person. And lots of people can play that role. Somebody from inside, somebody from outside. A very good formula sometimes is an insider twinned with an outsider, because they have different perspectives and knowledges. But another way to think about this, and maybe this is different from how you're coming at it now, is in a world where our scope for getting people to do what we want them to do is shrinking, then more and more of leadership and management is actually facilitation. So that's why I said I'm trying to broaden the definition of a facilitator to be anybody who helps people collaborate to affect change. And I think you can argue that, you know, a lot of what leaders and managers have to do in today's world is facilitating in the sense I mean the word. And therefore, it's an inside job. It can be done by a team leader or a team member or somebody who takes the role for this project. And all it means is, doesn't mean you have to be neutral, but it does mean that when you're playing that role, your focus is on helping the group move forward together, not on directing or manipulating or forcing the group to do what you want them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. That leadership. And yeah, you're right. I recently interviewed an author who their role as a company is to negotiate or put framework in place that a leader or a team leader or whatever will negotiate an agreement with his staff. And so the staff will say, this is what I want from a leader. And they will list the characteristics. Yeah. And then the leader will say, this is what I want from you, and will list the characteristics and almost flesh it out until they know exactly what they expect from each other. And so that, you're right, that's a facilitation in itself to come up with that. Now, Adam, the facilitation process itself. So I recently went on a course around crucial conversations, which is kind of in my field of you know, work. I quite often have to do that as well, where, you know, customers unhappy, or I'm trying to negotiate a deal and all that kind of stuff, where you have these crucial conversations with people. What elements should you bring? Because you talk about being a master facilitator and playing an outer and inner game. Can you give us some insights in how you would do that type of facilitation? I know it's not an easy, straightforward question, but maybe you can give a bit of an overview on how you, as a facilitator, you could do this. What, maybe some tips on what to look out for.
When I started to write about what does it mean to facilitate in this broader sense of the word, I realized that the most common kind of facilitation is what I call vertical facilitation, which means that you're focusing on the group or the team or the organization as a whole. And you're saying, our focus is going to be on what's best for the whole. And you know you're involved in vertical facilitation where people will say, well, thanks, that's an interesting perspective, but could you leave your agenda at the door here? We're trying to figure out what's best for the whole. That's the most common approach to facilitation, or I suppose to management. And it has obvious upsides, coordination, coherence, but it also has big downsides, rigidity and domination. There's a second kind of facilitation, which is also getting very popular. I call it horizontal facilitation, which sort of takes the opposite tack, that to move forward, we really have to place priority on what the perspectives and interests and choices of individual team members are. And the upside of that is you get autonomy and self-management and diversity and variety. But the downside is if you just have that, you get fragmentation and gridlock. Everybody, they're doing their own thing and not getting anywhere. And what I call transformative facilitation doesn't choose either vertical or horizontal. It chooses both. It cycles between them. I once, I gave a talk years ago about this to a group of managers in the Netherlands. There's a profession in the Netherlands called interim managers. These are people who are professional managers. They come into a company to run a project or to replace somebody who's on leave. So they go from organization to organization as professional managers. And when I said that I thought the key to facilitation or management was paying attention both to the whole and the parts, they just looked at me like I was saying the most obvious thing in the world. They said, yes, that's all we do. That's 100% of the job. So again, I'm not saying anything, I haven't invented anything. I'm just having a different way of talking about it. And so what I think facilitation involves, not either vertical or horizontal, it's like you don't argue about whether it's better to inhale or exhale. You got to do both. You got to do both vertical and horizontal, but you have to alternate between them. So with that framework, you can start to see all the difficult questions in in facilitation involve employing both the vertical and horizontal. And there's just 10 moves, or I should say five pairs of moves. And if you understand these 10 moves, you've got it all. This is all you need to know. Advocating and inquiring. So saying, I think this is what's going on, and inquiring, what do you think is going on? I'm sure that would have been part of the crucial conversations training you alluded to. Concluding and advancing. Mapping and discovering. Directing and accompanying, and standing outside and standing inside. So it's not actually that complicated. There's only 10 moves. It's like a recipe with only 10 ingredients. The thing that makes it challenging is there is no set order or predetermined rhythm for using these 10 moves. It's like I tell you there's a recipe with 10 ingredients, but I'm not going to tell you in what proportions or what order or how to combine them. I'm just going to say, pay attention to what's needed next. I suppose maybe good chefs do. I'm not that good a cook.
Yeah.
But that's all there is. It's just making 10 moves. And wow. All of the skill is knowing what's the move I need to make now.
Could you just go through those five again so that people don't have to rewind and what are those five? Could you just list them again?
Yeah. So what I say is there's five questions that all collaboration has to answer, and each of them has both a vertical and a horizontal way of answering it. And facilitation, therefore, involves 5 × 10 moves, what I call outer moves. Wow. So I'll go through them more slowly. So the first basic question over and over in any working together is, how do we see our situation? What's going on here? And people answer that question by cycling between advocating, saying, this is the answer, and inquiring, which is asking, how do you see things? What are we missing here? What are other ways of looking at this? So advocating and inquiring are the first two moves. Concluding and advancing. Sometimes there's a time when we have to say, okay, we need to make an agreement here. We need to finish this, but not always. Often trying to reach an agreement is not at all helpful, either because it's too soon or it's not the important thing to do. What's important is to keep moving, to keep advancing, even if not everything's agreed, or particularly if not everything's agreed. So the second pair is between concluding and advancing. The third pair is between mapping and discovering. So mapping means we're thinking in advance, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to turn left, we're going to turn right. Very useful, planning. But you can never know what's going to arise as you go along. And so you also have to be discovering, including discovering if where you thought you would need to go is not where you need to go next. The fourth has to do with who makes decisions. There's a time to be directing, like the director of an orchestra, you do this, you do that, you come in now, and accompanying, where actually the facilitator or the leader or the manager is following alongside, helping out, but letting people direct themselves. And the fifth and most fundamental, in a way, is how do you see yourself in relation to the situation that you're trying to change? Do you see yourself as outside, standing outside trying to fix things? Or do you see yourself as standing inside with a partial responsibility for things being the way they are? And again, like all of these pairs, it's a terrible mistake to choose one pole or the other. It's a classic polarity, like Barry Johnson talks about polarities. You have to choose both. You have to move back and forth. And in this case, move back and forth between standing outside, standing inside, like Heifetz calls it, standing on the balcony and standing on the dance floor. They're both useful. You need to do them both.
Are you an author and would like to launch your business or technology book to a global audience? The Business Bookshelf Podcast can run a virtual book launch for you. It'll include planning sessions with you, the 60-minute live event on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube, up to 3 guests to appear and endorse your book, social media support and activation, prizes and giveaways, the edited event to share with people who couldn't make it, 3 social snippets to share on social media, and a dedicated episode of this podcast. To find out more, visit www.businessbookshelfpodcast.com. And if it's not for you, then tell others about it. Thank you. So just to remind the listeners, we're speaking to Adam Kahan about his fantastic book, Facilitating Breakthrough, How to Remove Obstacles, Bridge Differences, and Move Forward Together. And Adam's just listed the 5 pairs, and that is really useful. So just have a listen to that and obviously read Adam's book. But Adam, I've got a couple more questions, and then I'd like to ask you about Rios Partners. Maybe my penultimate question then is, I presume you go into a facilitation with an end goal in mind. I presume, maybe correct me if I'm wrong. And then using these tools and techniques, and you develop them over time to become this master facilitator, guide them potentially to a peace pact or whatever you're trying to guide them to. Is there a point where things veer off course, or that you have to take, you know, reassess the situation? And do you have the ability now to do that on the fly, or do you have a timeout? How do you handle that kind of situation where things are maybe getting a bit of out of control or veering off too far in one direction? How do you get them back? Are you on inverted commas track?
Well, the situation you describe is not at all unusual. And I think the most fundamental thing about what I call facilitation is it's always out of control. I mean, literally, I am not in control of what people are going to think or say or do. So it's always out of control. And so it's very frequently not going as I thought it would or wish it would. And so in the pairs we talked about 5 minutes ago, that's the that yes, I can make a plan, I can rehearse, I can prepare, I can make a design. That's the mapping. But in real life, things don't go as we expect them to. And that's where the discovery comes in. So what you say is not unusual at all. And the worst mistake a facilitator, in this general sense, the word facilitator, can make is to hold on tightly. No, no, it has to go like this. Can we get back to the way I think it ought to be? On the contrary, it's all about adjusting as you go. And what I say in the book is that I measure my progress not by whether things go off what I thought they would, but how quickly can I recover things, you know, situations that used to take me months to recover from, I can now recover from in a week, and things that used to take me an hour, I can get, you know, see what to do in a few minutes. So yes, sometimes you call a timeout or you take a break or you think about it for a week or whatever. But the main point I'm trying to make is the idea that you would need to adjust as you go along is not an unusual thing. It's, as my wife says often to me, she says, Adam, it's a thing called life. So the idea that we can predict and control what's going to happen is, I don't know, it's not the world I live in. Maybe you do. That's the big... If facilitators are trying to control things, it's not facilitation. It's what they call in South Africa, facipulation, manipulation that's disguised as facilitation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've done a fair amount of facilitation myself, obviously nowhere near your level, of course. But I've learned a new facilitation style and methodology, which I'm going to lead a workshop in Cape Town in a couple of weeks' time. And what really scares me the most to be, you know, talking about this is that it's a new framework with a new way of structuring it. And it's exactly what you've just said now. It's like stepping into the unknown. And I imagine that I'm nervous and worried about it in a way, but maybe I shouldn't be, because actually every bit of every facilitation you might prepare as much as you like with the methodology, the framework, the five pairs, whatever. But every facilitation is a step into the unknown in a way, just like you said. Is that right? You just got to try and manage it the best of your ability and kind of control the situation, or maybe not, and direct it in a way that hopefully leads to an outcome that's a desirable outcome.
Yes. So, you know, you can practice helps a lot, and doing something for the 100th time is not the same as doing it for the first time.
Yeah.
But in a way, the worst mistake you can make is to go in thinking you know exactly what's happening and needs to happen, because that's when you stop paying attention. And that's when it really goes pear-shaped. So it's both. You have to practice, you have to prepare, you have to plan, and you have to relax and pay attention to, okay, I made all these plans. What do I really have to do now? And I find that once people understand that you are genuinely trying to be helpful, you're not trying to control or manipulate them or get them to do what the boss told you before they need to do, if and when they reach the conclusion that you're actually trying to help them get where they want to go, then everybody, including you, can relax. And it's just the first period where they're not sure, is this a facilitator or is this a manipulator?
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic. The last thing, Adam, and this might be a long answer, and so tell me if it is. And you mentioned the three things right at the beginning of the interview, and I'd love to ask you about it because it sounds really interesting. The role of love, power, and justice in transformative facilitation. You know, when I look at those three words, I think maybe justice plays a role, but love and power, I mean, how do they play a role in transformative facilitation? Maybe the emphasis on love rather than power and justice.
Well, of course, I've chosen these words because they're simple words and they're evocative, but I'm using them in a very specific meaning. I don't mean romantic love. I don't mean oppressive power. But I've worked a lot with this, and I've written a lot about this. I wrote a previous book called Power and Love. And I'm emphasizing them because I think this is really the essence of the work. And so love is the drive to connect, to unite the separated, whether that's uniting or connecting between marketing and production, or between an organization and its community, or between two people, or between me and my own higher self, or between the industry and the natural environment. It's about love is the drive to connect that which has been fragmented. And in a way, in the simplest way, the first thing you do in facilitation is love, in the sense that what do you do when you bring people together from across an organization or a sector or a country? You are uniting the separated. So it's, I don't mean romantic love.
Yeah.
But love in that sense is the most basic thing you're doing. The second thing is power. And I don't mean power over, I mean power in the sense of the drive to self-realization. And you absolutely need power, literally, to get anything done. Power is ambition and people's drive to get where they're trying to go and to do their job and to contribute and to bring their capabilities to the situation. Literally nothing happens without power. So I have been working a long time. How do you employ both power and love? In other words, both contribution and connection. And the third element, which I now think is required to actually make progress, is justice, or if you want a more ordinary word, equity. People are concerned, everybody is concerned with being treated fairly. Now, they have different definitions of what fairness is, and usually they think they're the ones not being treated fairly. But if you actually want to make progress, you need this third element of equity or justice. And so if I say the facilitation is about moving forward together, helping people to move forward together, move is power, forward is justice, and together is love. So yes, I'm using unusual words, but I'm using them because I think they actually get, this is the foundation of what we're doing. Everything else is just technique on top of it.
That's fantastic. Now, Adam, you key and play a leading role in this fantastic organization, Rios Partners. And I'll have the link in the show notes, riospartners.com. Could you tell us a little bit about it? Because I would love people to go to the website and have a look at it. And could you give us an insight into what they can find if they go to the website?
Yeah. So Rios is an international social enterprise, meaning it's a company in the public good, what's called in the United States a B Corp. And we have offices throughout the Americas and Europe and Africa and Australia. And our work is, helping diverse groups of people move forward together, make progress on their most important and intractable issues, whether it has to do with climate change or education or health or sustainable food systems or water or that's the work we do. And we're an organization of about 100 people, and that's what we do all day, every day. So facilitate diverse teams to enable them to move forward together, to work with people, diverse people, including people they may not agree with or like or trust, because that's what they need to do to make progress on the challenge they're facing. And this is a book about how do you do that? What's the nuts and bolts of helping people move forward together?
And if people, this interview will probably be released in like 3 or 4 weeks' time. So I don't know if it'll still be on your website, but you've just had, or you will be concluding in 2 days' time, an absolutely fantastic series with South Africa's own Trevor Manuel, Cristina Figueres, and Jean Manuel Santos. And is there any way, like people like me, can watch recordings of this? I see in the blog section you've got some conversations with Trevor Manuel, and which I love the blog area. People need to go onto Rios Partners and just click on the blog to look at those articles. Are you going to be having more of these conversations? Is there any way that we can get recordings of them?
Yes. So you have to go to the website before Thursday. So I guess it's going to be a little late. But anyway, yes, people who register for this series can get a recording, and I suppose there'll be something about these three conversations on the blog site even when your podcast is released. But yes, I want, because I think that the world needs more and better collaboration and therefore more and better facilitation, I wanted to interview some people I know who I've met, who I think are in their own way extraordinary facilitators. And so the three I'm starting with this year, maybe there'll be more next year, is, as you said, Trevor Manuel, who for 15 years was the Minister of Finance in South Africa and knows something about, you could say, facilitation in the political sphere. It was actually an extraordinary conversation, especially when I read the transcript afterwards. I saw that he has a stunning way of thinking about what that involves. Cristiana Figueres, who was the Secretary General of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and facilitated 6 years of global climate negotiations leading up to the Paris Accords, which is probably the most stunning facilitation accomplishment in the history of mankind. And then Juan Manuel Santos, who I've worked with in Colombia for many years and who was the president of Colombia, who signed the peace treaty with the FARC and won the Nobel Peace Prize. So I'm
incredible.
The book is intended for people who do facilitation in ordinary circumstances, because I think it's needed everywhere for the reasons we've been discussing. But I wanted to raise the bar a little bit by talking with these three world-changing facilitators.
Amazing. I've just seen, Adam, that if you go onto the blog for Trevor Manuel, there is access to a 28 or 29 minute recording. There. So I hopefully that'll be the other two as well. I'll definitely listen to it as soon as I can. But Adam, it's been amazing. And thank you so much for your book. I really enjoyed it. And as a really minor facilitator, I need to read it again and again and again to get better at what I do for part of my job. But thank you so much for writing it. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you. I hope we see you in South Africa soon in Cape Town. Grace us with your presence. And thank you very, very much for being interviewed on the podcast.
It was my pleasure, and I'm looking forward to getting back to Cape Town.
And so just to remind people, we've been speaking to Adam about his fantastic book. It really is incredible. Facilitating Breakthrough, How to Remove Obstacles, Bridge Differences, and Move Forward Together. So I'll have the link in the show notes. It'll be a link to Amazon, but you can buy it on Goodreads, wherever you want to buy it. And then, you know, go to Rios Partners. I'll have a link in the show notes there as well. And just connect and stay in touch with the blogs that are written on the site. So thank you very, very much, Adam. Appreciate you. And I hope you, the listener, found this as interesting and useful as I did. You are always guaranteed of a very interesting 30 or 35 minutes on just such a variety of topics, whether it's facilitation, leadership, innovation, communication, anything really. Empathy. I've interviewed someone who's written a book on empathy. So if you've got 30 minutes or 35 minutes and you want to spend each week while you're exercising or driving to work, and you want other people to do it as well, please share the podcast. And you can also hear what Adam has to say. And then obviously people will read the book as well. If you want to reach out to me, then please do. My email is lance@ideastorm.co.za. And the website is businessbookshelfpodcast.com. Don't worry, there'll be links in the show notes that you can click on as well. So thank you very much. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you, Adam. Goodbye, everyone. Bye-bye.